Accession number 27185, reel 27.
Major Barras, reel 27. You were saying that the 8th Corps was transferred from the eastern side of the British sector
yes.
to the western side where you were in Comont Levante.
Yes, it was moved across. I think it must have been an incredible thing to do, a whole corps moving across the lines of communication of all the other troops already up in the front. But it was done. And they moved across to the right of line, ready for the breakout, which Montgomery had arranged. I think it was the 28th of July or something like that. It was due to take place. Anyway, we found ourselves here next to the Americans, who... on occasions I think we had one or two instances where we had to use artillery, where there was sort of either it may have been enemy patrols or enemy small enemy attacks, but they used to join in with us with our artillery, and once they did shell us. Yes,
the American shelled you.
Yes, once.
Do you know of any occasions when we shelled them?
Oh, probably. I can't remember though. I don't know, we may have done. In talking of that, I remember we got cannon fired by them once. We were going down a village street somewhere, which we were clearing, and the next thing I knew was these aircraft descending on us, line astern, firing cannons at us as they went through and up, and we looked up and found they were American aircraft. This happened, of course, and the other occasion, of course, was when the forts dropped a whole lot of bombs on one of our corps headquarters. I saw that. We were going down the road. And, of course, they used to go across in the sky way ahead in packs of 50 forts with a trail of vapor behind them. A wonderful sight. And on this particular day, it was beautiful. We could just see the sort of silvery glistening in the sun and that sort of thing as they went across. And all of a sudden we saw little black things coming down from underneath. Fortunately they didn't hit us, but they landed somewhere down the road, and I believe there was it was 12 Corps or one of them got plastered. But these things happen in war, unfortunately.
Did you have any personal contact with Americans while you were in that area?
Not at that time. No, later in Holland I did, but not here. The thing, after a bit of being here, the battalion was moved out, and I was left behind, my company, C Company, under command of I was put under command of a battalion of the Green Howards. Can't remember which battalion it was.
Probably the 6th or 7th, if you were still
probably, there. Yes. And I was right on the right. Mm. And it was just before the breakout occurred, and Bomber Command were coming to drop a lot of bombs on a concentration of armour near Comore. And we were told the day before that they were coming. And when we woke up the next morning, we stand to as usual at dawn. And I think they were supposed to come about an hour after dawn. And the cloud was so low that I thought, well, we thought they wouldn't be coming. And then just about a quarter of an hour or 10 minutes before they were due, we looked across in the west, and there was the sky was full of little black dots. And they came under the cloud, it must have been about 2,000 feet, over us. And as they got near, the noise of their engines was absolutely deafening, because I mean, we could see their rear gunners sitting up there, we could see the bomb doors open in the gallery, and the bombs all lined up. And of course they released their bombs just over us. And of course they went forward like that, and this went on. I think I was told afterwards there were 700 of them, four engine bombers. It was an awesome sight, it really was. This is one of the things I really have got in my mind. And they came on for 20 minutes, just roaring over our head, dropping their bombs. We could hear them booming away, banging away across the other side of a wood there. They looped round, and then when started to go back, a couple of them were shot down. There was AK-AK fire. Must have been 88s, I suppose, even though they may have been too low for 88s, but there were black clouds in the sky, black little black bursts in the sky. And it was a very sad sight to see these huge aircraft wheel over and sideways, and then sort of descend quickly to the ground and crash with a whole sort of sparks and flame and smoke. But eventually, the last one dropped his bombs and they went, and the noise died down, and they're gone. And all that was left was great clouds of smoke coming up from behind the wood, which we saw on the other side, and a lot of explosions going on, so they must have hit ammunition dumps and so forth, or tanks with stuff in them. But it was a masterful exhibition of pinpoint bombing. Not one bomb fell short, and I didn't see any of them near us at all.
Do you have any idea of how far ahead of you the bombs are actually falling? When
they must have been, I should think, about a mile, probably not as much as that. It's very difficult to, I know there was a dip, there was a sort of small valley before us. Well, when I say a valley, it wasn't a valley, it was a small sort of dip in the ground. And then it climbed up a little on the other side, and there was this wood.
Yes.
And then behind the wood, they were bombing. They must have dropped the bombs in the wood as well, I imagine. And then, of course, then the breakout came, and then...
You were saying that this air raid was probably preliminary to the breakout.
Yes.
8th Corps was going to carry out. Mm. What happened then? Did you take part in that breakout, or were you just holding...
No, we were just holding the line. Yeah. There's one thing I might mention that helped us with the RAF at that time, because we had panels to put out, the yellow panels, which we put out as soon as we got up in the morning, in front of each trench. Which we've been given. I don't know whether we carried them around with us or whether they were just issued when they were required. I notice in the Gulf War they had orange panels, unless they changed. So, I mean, they obviously, looking down from their aircraft, they could see where we were. And as I say, quite often the rear gunners would give us a wave from the window back as they went over. Well, the next thing... I wasn't there too long. Actually, after this, I got orders to get back to the battalion as quickly as possible, because they were just about to do an operation. So I was involved in a forced march.
Forced march on foot?
On foot, yes. Nobody gave us any transport. And the objective which the battalion had been given was a ridge near Launay. And we called it Launay Ridge, but I don't believe that it was actually known as Launay Ridge by the French. It was called Launay Ridge by us, but because it happened to be near the village Launay. So I had to do a forced march back there to join in a hastily arranged attack, which so often happened. These attacks suddenly came up. And... we didn't get any chance to do any reconnaissance at all. I got back just in time. It was towards the evening then.
How far did you have to go on the first
I can't march? Remember. Well, it was between where we were and Launay. You know, perhaps one could find it on the map and
yes.
I'd get some idea.
Do you have any idea of how long it took you?
I have no idea, no. I can't remember what day. I know I got back in time. Having done the force march, we then launched into an attack.
Immediately?
Almost immediately, yes. Because, as I say, they've been warned about this attack. And very little reconnaissance had been done. But an artillery... We did, in this case, move forward behind a rolling barrage, I remember.
Was this a battalion?
Battalion attack, yes. Yeah. Yes, it was battalion. Mm. We also had help from aircraft, too. Trying to remember the name of them. Not Spitfires or Hurricane.
Typhoons?
Typhoons, that's right, yes. They're magnificent aeroplanes. They've been forgotten, almost.
What did they do?
Well, they were targeting behind... concentrations of enemy armour. There was also the barrage lifted onto the objective and continued to to pound there until we were nearly up. There were also artillery programs on the flanks, I remember.
Sounds like it was a very sophisticated
Yes, it was. Attack, yes. Sort of yes, but it was put on at very short notice. Mm. We had a squadron of tanks with us. I can't remember whose they were or what they were, but we normally had a squadron with a battalion. And we were warned that it was quite strongly held. But as we got nearer, there was some desultory firing from the objective. And when we got up on the ridge, they ran and gone. And they left behind all their sort of half-eaten food. It's a lot of equipment and stuff.
Did you get any idea of what sort of strength they were?
No idea. I can't remember. Somebody must have told us at the time.
Were they dug in?
Oh, yes. Mm. Yes. Yeah. It was a long ridge.
Yeah.
And when we got on top of this ridge, we got a splendid view of the countryside, because we've been amongst woods and so forth, and I think it's probably the first time we got a really good view across the open country.
Was it covered in vegetation itself, the ridge, or was it...
No, it was open. Quite open, yes, as far as I can remember.
How was the attack arranged on the ground then? Your company was involved and the battalion. Was it two companies?
Yes, it's as usual thing, yeah. On a sort of attack like that. When you're attacking an objective, which is sort of the width of the company, and normally when it's extended or deployed, the attack was usually done by two companies up, two companies behind, in extended order. And this was a perfect attack. It worked very well. Artillery program, tanks, aircraft, and the enemy had had enough and gone.
How were the tanks used on this occasion?
Well, normally tanks would have come with us. They would have been allocated down to companies, probably. You've got a troop per company, it's the forward companies, and then so probably hold the rest back in reserve. On occasions, they've been used on the flank to get covering fire in from the side, which I did in the next thing, which comes up. And sometimes we actually sat on them, but it was only when there was quite a long approach, when we weren't expecting to be attacked, interfered with by the enemy, because you're very vulnerable sitting on a tank.
Do you remember what kind of tanks they were?
I can't remember on this occasion. I know we had Churchills on some. Mm. There was either Churchills or the American ones.
German,
yes.
And on this attack, was it a long approach to the objective?
Yes, it was quite a long approach, yes. Across fairly open ground, too.
Did anything come back from them in the way of artillery or mortar fire as you were...
Oh, there was some, yes. Yeah. But surprising enough, after we'd been warned, it was so tame, really, in the end. I mean, it wasn't totally tame, but I mean, it, from what we were expecting and what we'd previously had, it didn't turn out to be the... I remember one company commander saying to me just before we were going to the attack, said, we've done no reconnaissance again, this is going to be another Essex Wood, he said. I remember him saying... But it didn't turn out so.
What role did your company have? Was it one of the forward companies, or was it one of the follow-up companies?
I think I was the left-hand front company.
Front,
yes.
And you were saying that you'd be the width of the company. How wide would that be when you were in open
order? Oh, gosh. Well, if you've got two platoons up, we've got four sections, and each platoon's got two sections up. And you've got, in other words, you've got your frontage is actually four sections of about seven, or should be seven men. Mm. I don't know quite. We were very heavily depleted at periods during the war. So supposing you've got seven men in each, you've got 28 men in front, with about 6 foot between each. So if you take 6 times 28, you may have some idea of the frontage of a company, but it would depend on the ground again, too.
So it's about 120 metres, roughly.
Yeah, something like that.
And this was open ground, wasn't it?
Yes.
Presumably sloping upwards as you were going.
Yes, oh yes, it was up to the ridge, yes.
Was it a steep bridge? Or
yes, it was quite steep, yeah. But we didn't, there wasn't. I don't think we suffered very many casualties here at all.
Did you see anything of the enemy at all?
No. I don't remember seeing any. I think we must have seen some of them belting away down the back there somewhere, because it was open ground.
So they were running off?
Yeah, they ran.
On the crest?
Yeah. Before we got there, some of them were gone. Yeah. I think we must have seen some of them belting off, but I mean, we were a bit busy trying to sort ourselves out and thanking God they'd gone anyway, I think.
Did they make any attempt at a counterattack?
No, I don't know. No, not then.
So it sounds as though
there was the actual momentum of the breakout and everything was gathering pace then.
Did anyone pass through you once you'd taken the
I can't remember what happened after the ridge, quite honestly.
It does sound as though it was an important position.
Oh yes, yes. I think there's probably another lateral road the other side somewhere.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you mind if I?
After the attack on the Launay Ridge near Ancterville, did you stay in possession for any length of time? Or were you moving forward?
I think we were moved. I don't think we stayed there any length of time at all. There was no counterattack, and I don't think there was much in the way of response from artillery, as far as I can remember. The next thing I remember, we are now right into August almost, aren't we?
It's only August by this stage.
Yes. About a week later, there was an operation. Now, looking at the map there, I see there's a place called Esson, which rings a bell. What actually happened there, I don't know. But we certainly went through Esson.
Yes.
I think there was a form... we did meet the enemy there. I seem to have... Esson is in my mind. Mm. And I think we did have some opposition there. But it wasn't one of the big operations, I don't think.
Were the enemy perhaps trying to delay your...
Well, probably.
Yes. Did you go anywhere near Villers-Bocage?
No. I know that was 7th Armoured's original objective, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it was on 12th of June.
That's right. And we would have gone with them, I think, at that stage,
yes.
But we didn't. Now, the other thing, of course, here is that we had now joined 59th Div.
When did that transfer?
Well, I'm not sure, but it was around this time, because I know in the next operation we had, we were definitely part of 59 Div. And we were only with them for about 2 weeks, I think, before they got broken up.
Was that you as a battalion or you as a brigade?
Brigade.
So 56th Brigade went from 50th Div to...
59. Now, whether we were... part of the division or still independent, I don't know. But I know they'd had a lot of casualties, 59 Div. I don't know quite where or what they did. But they definitely needed thickening out a bit with somebody else. So that's why we were put to them, I think. But after this next operation, which I'm just about to explain, they were broken up and we went to 49.
Did you notice any... difference at all, you know, as a company commander?
No, none at all.
To you, which division you were with?
Not then, no.
No.
I mean, we're well aware we were 50 Div because we'd and 7th Armoured when we were with them. But I can't honestly say I got any recollection of being with 59. In fact, I probably weren't even aware we'd changed divisions. So we were obviously told, but it was something on the side, so to speak. It wasn't terribly important at that stage. We were too busy doing things. It was more important to brigade commander. I think it was still Brigadier Pepper who was our brigadier at that time. But I know he was changed later, like all most commanders were at some stage or another, with Montier at the back. I don't know. I don't think he did anything which was caused any alarm or just trouble anywhere. But he was definitely changed. But I think he was still with us at this stage. But I'm just going to what I was saying was that it was the fact that we changed divisions was something of importance to brigadiers and COs, but not down at my level.
Not company.
No, not really. So we had this situation at Esson, which I can't remember too well, except I remember our brigade IO at that time, who was, battalion IO, Hugh, can't remember his name so well, I only saw him recently. Got a double barrel name. And he's Bart now. And he's a Roman Catholic priest now. At that stage, he was a Roman Catholic, and he got to know the curé at Esson. And after the war, we went back there. But, however, that's by the way. Barrett Leonard is his name, that's right. Hugh Barrett Leonard. He was a battalion IO. And now he's at the Oratory in London. And he invites me on St. Hugh's Day. He can have a guest. And I go to the Oratory and have supper there. It's quite an experience. Anyway, that's quite beside the point. The next thing, we went through the wood. I remember going through the wood of what we thought Grimbosque. Mm. But I've since learnt later that the French call it Grimbourg.
Is this on the way down towards Thury Harcourt?
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's beside Thury Harcourt. It's on the way to a little village called Croissy. Mm. And Forge a Combo. Mm.
So you didn't go into Thury Harcourt itself?
No. Mm. I think the Gloucesters did that. Mm. Or somebody else, not us.
Now, this is an absolutely enormous wood. And
we went through it.
It's about 7 or 8 mile.
Well, I don't know whether we went through all of it.
No.
We certainly went through it. Yes. I don't think we met any enemy there.
Yes.
We were supposed to. I think we were on the move in a hurry here.
Yes.
Because everybody was moving in a hurry now.
Were you still moving on foot?
Yes. No, we were definitely on foot.
Yes.
Where's Thury Harcourt?
That's Thury Harcourt.
Oh, there's Esson.
That's where I saw. Beyond Thury Harcourt.
Yes. And there should be Croissy. I saw it there somewhere. Croissy and Forge a Combo. Which is. Where's the. Here.
It's Grimbosque. That's
Grimbosque, yeah.
Or Grimbert.
Oh, that's a part of it as well, isn't it?
That's the Forêt des Anglais.
No, we went, that's right. Yes, yeah. And then we came out, and the next thing that happened was I remember we were halted, and my company was in dead ground. I was in dead ground, and there was just before us was this steep hill and open green grass, I remember, and over the top of the hill was a little village called Forge a Combro, which was part of Croissy village, I think it was. And we'd had reports that the enemy were holding this. And the CO, Geoffrey Ellett, had told me that he wanted me to prepare, as a company, the next morning to probably go and take it.
Would that be you on your own as a company?
Yes. Yeah. We were below here in this dead ground. I don't know whether the enemy knew we were there, because the village itself was less than half a mile, I think, from half a mile the other side. They couldn't see us and we couldn't see them, but we had the information that was being held. And the next morning he told me to attack the place. He gave me the full squadron of tanks which we had, and they were Churchills, I remember that. And we had an artillery program, not a creeping barrage, but what we called stonks, concentrations on the village. And we started up this hill with two platoons up, myself in the middle with one platoon behind. And I remember I thought, well, we've got to move quickly and get over this as quickly as we can. So we moved very, very quickly and put the tanks on the flank so that they could provide covering fire and supporting fire into the village itself.
Which flank? Left flank?
Right, I think it was.
And you could tell the tanks where to go. It was your attack.
Yes, they were put under command.
They were under command.
Yeah, well, in support.
Yes.
And I had an FOO.
How did you actually liaise with the tanks?
Well, the squadron commander would come and talk to me, and we would talk together. Same with the FOO. We'd have a little O group beforehand.
Right. Once you're on the move, could you...
No, once I was on the move, I don't think I had any direct communication with the tanks, no. The only bloke I had with me would be the FOO.
Yes.
And I had call for artillery.
How much artillery did you have on call on that?
I think we only had a field regiment. I don't think we had... We may have had more than that. I don't know. But a field regiment, I would think. I mean, normally we had call on battery.
Yes.
But when it was a particular operation, you would probably have a field regiment if it wasn't employed elsewhere. But normally if you would have a battery for a battalion... And they would take part of, they would take care of all the defence tasks which were laid out for your defence. So anyway, we went over the top there, and frankly, I can't remember because I was so involved with this that I can't remember. I can't remember what I know. We went in. I can just see the buildings and everything, and we went in. And the CO, Geoffrey Edit, was getting a bit worried behind because he said all he could hear was bangings going on over the other side of the hill. And I got separated from my radio wireless operator because I'd gone on with the forward platoons. And he said he got no messages back and all he could hear was this banging going on. And he said after about 45 minutes, he was mortified because he saw 120 prisoners coming back escorted by two members of C Company. So... It was a good little battle. Again, there was a... I think, if you look at the map, you'll find there's a big lateral road the other side, down the other, because this was on the high ground.
Yes.
And I find this, when I'm totally involved in something, it doesn't imprint itself on my mind. I can't remember any occasion giving out orders. I must have done it almost daily. But I can't remember one occasion when I did it. But I can remember seeing things which I wasn't totally involved in. In this particular instance, I was in charge, and therefore I was totally sort of absorbed by it all.
Do you remember if you had any casualties during that?
We had one or two, but not many. Mm-hmm. No, because we it was almost a coup de main, actually, because we went in there so fast, I think we surprised them. Oh. Because the artillery wasn't timed to come down. We went... You know, the whole thing was timed so that we didn't give them any warning that we were coming.
So they had a stonk and then you were on top?
We were almost on top of them.
And you had your tanks?
The tanks on the gone round the side.
Did the tanks get into the rear, do you know, of them?
I don't know. Mm. They probably did because we... You see, Forge de Combrault was on the top of the hill.
Yes.
And then Croissy itself was further to the back.
Mm.
But it was... Forge de Combrault is all part of Croissy.
Yes.
There's one mayor, and he's in charge of the lot. Well, yes, but the whole area's only got 400 inhabitants. But it was a very important feature.
Do you remember if the enemy were actually in the buildings or around the buildings?
Oh, they were in the buildings, definitely. And around them. But they just gave themselves up, must have done.
Do you remember what sort of troops they were?
No, I don't. No, I don't. I've been back there since, and I was told by people who saw that there was a whole... In one of the fields there, all the weapons we'd taken off the Germans were all piled up in the middle of the field. But I just don't... You see, when you get involved in these things, as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't impress itself on my... memory. But it's a pity, actually, because it was quite a neat little attack.
It sounds like it was an ideal example of a quick attack.
Yes, yes.
And do you remember if beforehand you had an extensive briefing and time for recce, or whether you just had to...
No recce. We couldn't see. They were over the brow of the hill.
You just put it together
ad
hoc.
Yeah. Mm. Mm.